Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back as my guest Dr. Hildegard Stanninger. And today we're going to be talking about an interesting subject, nanomedicine. Nanotechnology has been around for some time now, and when I did my talk on the FDA, I looked into it in great detail, only to find that there was very, very little regulation of nanomedicine and even less known about the health effects of what is now rapidly entering our environment. Dr. Stanninger is one of the experts in the country on what this means for us, what the potential risks are, and what we need to know to protect ourselves. Thanks, Dr. Hilde, for joining us.
I appreciate this very much, Dr. Kolb. I always enjoy being on your show, and I thank you very much, and it's a great honor to share the radio waves with you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and I've been on your show, too. You want to mention your radio show for our listeners?
Yes, I appreciate that. Our radio show is the One Cell, One Light Radio. It's blog radio, and it's onecellonelightradio.wordpress.com, and it's every Wednesday from 1 to 3 o'clock on Pacific time. It's archived, so you can always listen to it anytime. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So you give us a little bit about your background as a toxicologist and then a little bit of information of how you discovered what was going on, the potential problems in nanotechnology as relates to medicine.
Mm-hmm. I'm an industrial toxicologist, PhD type. I also went to Capital University for integrative medicine and then in toxic tort law, environmental law, years ago at Kensington. The thing is, though, in my professional career, when I first started out in the field of environmental health, industrial hygiene and monitoring that then grew into the industrial tox, I started as an industrial hygienist and graduated from the OSHA Institute in Des Plaines with my colleagues in the first generation in the state of Florida as an industrial hygienist, where mm-hmm. those individuals, professionals, monitor the workplace and look at what you're being exposed to, if it's an acceptable level or not. None mm-hmm. of the regulations... If you are having symptoms of exposure to a toxic substance, whether it's metal, phthalates, polymers, or whatever it may be in the workplace, that takes precedence than whatever the level should be in the air for a compliance issue. But in this, I got heavy into industrial toxicology, then went into an advanced degree program for it, and I was in aerospace at that time. I started with ocean left and went to aerospace. And in this process, though, my role has always been to identify what is the toxin, and then as I left companies and had my own companies, I then created the appropriate antidotes. But what, and I sat on a number of professional committees and chair for the accreditation and also the SCADA special task force for the National Environmental Professional Organization, which is the National Registry of Environmental Professionals, NREP. The thing is that in this whole time, which first got me started with Morgellons, I was doing nano before because I had a task to identify a compound that they thought was all frequency oriented versus actually having other compounds in it. And we found that those compounds were at nano and below level. But anyway, in this time, I recognized with showing with the Morgellons that was caused by advanced nanomaterials, that there was no regulations. You could have these materials and dump it into the soil, spray it in with pesticides as extra adhesion. You could make medicines, which we're going to talk about today. And at the same time, there was, as you even mentioned, no FDA regulations, because they're all thinking it's so small that it's not going to do any harm, possibly. That's what I'm thinking. But what the reality is that this material, being, yes, so small, it can coat or react to the bielectric fields of the body in certain organs. It can react with the nervous system. In other words, the compound may allow itself to adhere to the nervous system and coat it and cause other different kinds of problems. What the difference was, too, from a toxicological standpoint, is in the observations of ones exposed, and you probably can elaborate more on this too, Dr. Cobb, is that anyone that had exposure to the advanced nanomaterials, especially the ones with Morgellons, they had multiple symptoms. Usually with a regular chemical, meaning a chemical that's not nanotized, they had properties of going to a specific organ system. Example, like ethylene oxide goes to the reproductive organs, loves ovaries. Formaldehyde loves to go to the nasal cavity and cause nasal cancer. Phenol loves to make leukemia in the body. These, you know, with benzene, these types of reactions. So in all of that, what I recognized and also NREP recognized that, one, none of us knew even geoengineering was occurring using nanotechnology. Thus, it's getting into the environment, being absorbed. At the same time, a whole other side of the house that is being very creative and creating technologies. We can take hydrogels and silicone nanomaterials and grow, with clone cells, grow a human ear in a petri dish. Yes, maybe the person needs the ear to hear, you know, and to make it aesthetically pleasing to the eye. And I feel no one has any objection to that. What I have an objection to is that there's this whole history out there of creation, but not doing any testing. And I'd like to go in, too, on some of the testing.
I wanted to mention one of my patients. Actually, it was two patients. They were truck drivers for a company contracted by the military to remove some contaminated soil. And they described to me that they realized that it was probably hazardous waste because there were signs of that when they got there, but they weren't told it was hazardous waste. And they were loading it into the truck to take it off the base. And then both of them had this sensation of biting and stinging that started with their feet and then went all the way up their body. Would you like to comment on that initial symptom after exposure to contamination with Morgellons?
There's many forms. Usually when they have the biting and the, I'm going to call it the needle effect, from a traditional chemicals, those can come from any of the neurotoxin-type chemicals. Certain pesticides can do that. But I will say primarily that symptom occurs with compounds that are, in particular, I'm going to call it nano, like in nano needles or any of these materials, and in particular hydrogels. There's new forms of hydrogels, which is just the expansion of silane, siloxane. Those compounds were used as antimicrobial agents to enhance polymerization. They can, because they have a quorum ammonium compound, an NH4, a positive charge on it, it gives like an electrical shock. That's why it feels like the burning needles and that. But it needs your oxygen to expand itself, so that's why a lot of individuals become numbness and tingling or red all over, because they are losing the oxygen. They're not turning blue in areas, but the compounds, as they react to the oxygen, they expand and create carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide. Carbon monoxide robs the body of vitamin C, and majority of these people, you'll see when they get any type of physical activity, they end up turning red, you know, for at least 10 minutes, and then the or if you put them in a sauna or something, it's like massive red compared to anything that you've seen prior to this type of exposure. And then the other thing is that a lot of times this material can get into the kidneys because you can breathe it, you swallow it, gets through the system, et cetera, and it can coat your intestinal colon because it's designed as an antimicrobial agent. And I'm only speaking of the hydrogels that create the silane and siloxane at this time. That in this process, it coats the intestinal colon, and yes, it's going to kill your natural flora, your indigenous bacteria. That's why we've seen so many GI tract disturbances in the last basically 10 years, and now even male and female incontinence, which incontinence used to be when I first started out in my career, when you had severe organophosphate poisoning or chemical exposure to formaldehydes or anything, like in a lot of the tight buildings where they were refurbishing, because it would accumulate in the bladder and paralyze the muscles, thus release, and at the same time in new studies that are out, that it kills the lactobacillus that's naturally occurring in the bladder, and thus it allows for incontinence. But and I'm just monitoring from looking at all the commercials at night for all these disorders. The thing is, though, when you have this occurring, you don't have any natural protection because these bacteria that are in your intestinal colon create the glutathione and other protective enzymes that are needed to neutralize and detoxify the body. So you have that battle, that those soldiers are gone, those courageous warriors, and then at the same time, you can't get rid of the toxin. That's why you see a lot of inflammation with these individuals or people. And now back to the hazardous waste individuals.
Oh, could I ask a question here?
Sure, sure.
I've seen some of the lowest vitamin D levels I've ever seen, like 6 and 8 level in Morgellons patients. Do you think it's an absorption problem?
No, I think, see, a lot of times the physician doesn't know this. I mean, but I have as proportional as the lowest levels, and I've seen those too myself, that there, I monitor also strontium 90, but you can only get it as strontium in the analysis. That strontium level was as high as 210, 160. They didn't have any radioactive nucleotide, et cetera. But strontium inhibits the metabolites of vitamin D, and you can't make vitamin D.
So that's coming from the chemtrails.
Definitely. It has to be coming from the chemtrails. And looking at strontium 90, looking at cobalt, looking at iridium, or any of these other compounds that are now being used in enhancing nanomaterials into nanospheroids, meaning spheres, so that it can go into the nanowires, the nanobelts, et cetera, and make circuits for the body, like a parallel nervous system, but it's an artificial nervous system within the body. The thing is that these components, these materials, they interfere with, I'm going to say, the normal conductivity, the normal bioelectric area of the kidney too. So it accumulates. It's like when you get exposure to the thin films, which are used to coat different things and put different nanoparticles in, substance, it can rob the vitamin K in the kidney. It can rob the vitamin D because it's not allowing the other component compounds that are natural in that organ system to function properly. It's like inhibiting it. Well, like with strontium, it inhibits vitamin D 1,25OH, and it can't function, and you need that metabolite to make vitamin D with some sunlight. And also, these compounds now are being coated with UV coating-resistant materials. In other words, like we have on labels for supplements or medications that are in the sunlight, that the label will not fade by the reaction with the sun. They're now coating these materials in that so that it can use a light spectrum or it can stimulate certain UV reaction, UVA, UVB, and UVC. And I honestly, I mean, I know I looked at the spectrum. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't even know there was a UVC, you know, until I found that one thing. And how I found that is I had an individual that was tested for sensory devices within their body in different waveguides by a private investigator, Melinda Kidder, and she referred them to me. And this individual, under black light, her pupils would reflect white and go, and the iris would be purple. And I go, what the world is that? Because I know with the yellow, which I did with the Eye of Horus, you know, that showed the quantum dots going this way, and I'm going, what's going on with the white? And then I found out that there was a whole research study that was being conducted using DT tomato gene to monitor cancer, and the effect would be that it would turn your pupils white under black light.
Really?
Yeah. So and this is a good
part.
What
you're saying is it got out. I mean, it was.
Well, it got out,
out
the, and this is important for, no, not necessarily. This is important for your audience because now the materials of nanotization, whether they're the composite, it comes as like a nanofluid. In the nanofluid, which can be the hydrogel, the sol gel, the polyacrylamide hydrogels, what it is those are like the adhesive gels. That's why in the Morgellons, when they had the lesions or the sores, they never could heal or anything because it was a polymer in between all this other material. They can add the nano wires, the nano needles, the nano, what do you call it, particles, any of this. It's like, as I've always said, the glue, the Elmer's glue with the, what do you call it, glitter in it and some yarn and some other materials. But the thing is, now those are being used to make different types of structures. These different types of structures, when they're hit with the right frequency, or the which goes into these smart meters and all this other stuff, but that's a whole other world. The thing is that it will make a specific shape. It will have a specific function. Due to its chemical composition, it will migrate to certain areas of the body because specific chemicals, as I stated earlier in the show, it has a specific affinity to go to that organ. The thing is that then that goes together, and you know, it could be we'd say a ball, a chain, and a piece of a metal. Hey, that makes a handcuff plus a ball around your ankle. But the thing is, that's a tool. These materials then go and make the tool, and that might be a sensor, that might be a nano platform to rebuild muscles, etc. And where, yes, it may have gotten out, but the thing is, they're putting these materials now in traditional medications so that it opens the whole field to telemetric medicine, telemetry, so that the industry of medical industry can monitor the patient that they are taking the medication. If you are a brain tumor person, have been diagnosed, or brain cancer, or maybe other cancers, but they want to monitor it remotely, they can have you inhale a dust. It's called neurodust, and drink nano diamonds. And those are used as the sensory material because it's a specific compound that is then calibrated remotely, and under SCADA systems, they can monitor you.
What does that monitoring look like?
Oh, it hits you with the frequency, and then it sends the data back to the main base, which may be the hospital or university.
Mm-hmm.
Or
well, this
government
is what,
research
I have,
program?
I have a question. My staff has noticed, and I have noticed, that when a patient has Morgellons really, really badly, I mean a bad case of it, when we're within, say, 3 or 4 feet of them, we start tingling and getting symptoms.
Right.
Now explain that. Why?
Okay, what that is, in their body, they have more of a charge. A charge,
right.
A valence charge, or electrophilic neutrophilic compound, meaning these composite materials. They can also be made of iron oxides that also have another ferrous charge, but that
mm-hmm.
charge in them is higher than your charge, and that's why it interacts with you. The same thing occurs
okay.
with me. I'll itch my arm. I'll itch my head.
Right.
No, it isn't.
Right.
I have never found it to be contagious. Maybe you have seen other things, but I have never, and no one in our staff has ever experienced anything from it in the years that we've been dealing with this. But the thing is, that charge happens.
Yeah, well, many people on my staff feel the charge, but I actually got the disease about 6 times, but it was always when I was operating on the patient. So something occurred in surgery, you know, because we were doing a lot of the surgery here for the wounds, you know, the very extensive wounds that needed to be debrided and just,
yeah.
I mean, really.
I wonder
so I did get it in surgery. But I got rid of it. I mean, I knew how to
and
get
I
rid
know
of
you
it.
Use the mask and everything, but
oh,
what,
yeah.
what
yeah,
is
but
different?
I think it comes through. I think
yeah,
it comes
what
through
is,
somehow.
Oh, well, any mask comes through because a lot of these are organics. You know, the mask is only looking at particles.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, what is different between you and possibly your staff is, and you shared on my radio show, the experience of... you know, silicone exposure, et cetera, from
right, exactly,
breast implant.
Yeah.
And please note that silane siloxane is based on silicone. So maybe
right.
you have an affinity for it to go to you because those are charged.
I have 30 grams of silicone that's missing. you know,
well,
that
somewhere
I,
in there, you know.
Yeah, it's in me, or maybe it's not in me anymore, but it might still be in me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right.
And,
I do have silicone. You're right.
And but that what I'm saying is that might be a difference because I know you do your probiotics,
right.
you do all this other stuff.
Yeah.
But that might be and
mm-hmm.
I could see how that could happen, you know, with mm-hmm. the chemical reaction that way. And the other thing is what I want to share with the audience too and you Dr. Kolb is that the advancement of nanomedicine is now in the mainstream medicine.
Mm-hmm.
It's 100% payable by Medicare. It is being implemented either through consortiums of medical universities with hospitals. So that then they get tested. And I'll give you an example. There was a beautiful presentation in reference to nanodiamonds, which are used out here in studies for taking the nanodiamonds and putting the medication of cancer therapy medication, chemotherapy on it, you know, the
mm-hmm.
medications that way, and also radiopharmaceuticals. That's the radioactive materials that are used in, radiation treatment or radioactive nucleotide treatment for cancer patients. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
the thing is that the diamonds are used in it so that then they can monitor how well you're responding, how well the chemical which is the chemotherapy agent, is being absorbed into the body. Now, in their clinical test to show that there was no toxicity, they only did a liver enzyme test.
Well, that's not very much.
No, right. And you're not necessarily going to see the effects on the liver as being the congestion or the, I'm going to say the failure of the liver right away, because it's going to be proportional to the congestion and also the charge which is on the diamond, because, say, like they use red diamonds, which are iron oxide type. They're always in, like, look like soccer balls. Versus the argyle diamond dust that they use in four different colors, pink, green, red, and blue, and yellow. There's no red, it's a pink, yellow, blue, and green. And they use that so that they can get the color spectrum by pixels from the electrical charge of the material, which is, when I first started out, and you did in this world of Morgellons and Nano, I did a definitive paper on smart dust. And smart dust was this composite material that you could see it looked like glitter. But now they have taken this and call it neuro dust, and taking the dust and put a sensor with it, which is a CMOS, which is made out of copper, and it's like a circuit, a semiconductor, and that used to be called a smart crystal moat, but now it's this neurodust, and as in medicine, and you know, you inhale it, and it can monitor. That's the difference. You know, it's billable and payable, but a lot of people don't realize it that way. And a lot of this stuff, you have to look at what do you use to make a semiconductor. I came from that business a long time ago at Northern. The thing is, you usually start with a silicon base. It makes the crystal, and then you add to it. Okay, you can add your wires, et cetera, this way, and that's where the nano tube came, as we know, and then they made the nano radio from it by putting a nano wire in it, et cetera. But it was a silicon base. And the difference is, too, that the coatings that are on it, like I mentioned, the silane, siloxane, et cetera, is for the expansion of it, you know, with the hydrogel. It's a lot going on, Dr. Kolb. That's all I could say.
And
I'm just amazed, because no one orders like a silicon, and you know, unless it's like a ruptured breast implant or anything, silicon, silicone, et cetera. Like, you could be exposed to the silane, siloxane base material for this hydrogel, sol gel, and then the thing is, the first metabolite of that compound is urea, then it goes to ammonia. And in so many of these cases that of exposure from nanomaterials, ammonia levels were sky high, low body temperature, 96, 95 versus normal being 98.6. It's been a long time since I've seen even a 98, you know?
Yeah. Well, I know the glitter. I had patients in like some of the states like Idaho that were telling me, it wasn't big cities, it was smaller towns, that if they went outside, they got this glitter all over them, and then their symptoms got a lot worse. So
right,
it had to be coming out of the atmosphere.
Right, and that atmosphere, I've seen it early on. I used to ride a train, especially at 4 o'clock. I could see, you know, just glitter everywhere. And other people have said that they've even taken one of those large handheld, like, spotlights, you know, and seen it at night, the reflection, you know, along that way. And also I want to bring out that in the medicine aspect, they're also using to develop sensors for, which is, all reportable, there's like 30 centers within the United States which are associated with university and hospital for biothreats, bioagents, contagion type scenarios, but they're hardcore sciences. The thing is that there's also the development of biothreat agent sensors. And in this, they use like a neurosensor, teeny tiny dot. And these sensors, Dr. Kolb, in your audience, are the size, like if I took a ballpoint pen and did a dot on a piece of paper, that may be too big. They're teeny tiny, okay? Because they're nanotized, okay? But the thing with them is that they also can be coated in this mixture of the nanofluids or anything that basically are like glues, they may be coated with viral particles. Example, the new sensor to monitor the threat agents of measles or any of this, if that was ever to be a bioagent, they would be with the sensor, the neuroCMOS, and also the viral particle. And that's why it's so important, I feel, that physicians, that they should be looking at, and nurse practitioners, of doing just the baseline of the viral load, which normal, you know, what you have in your immunizations or anything like that in the past, you know, as a child, just to see if you got any, immunity. Because I had an individual that suspected that they somehow got into this mess, and their viral load for measles was supposed to be anything above 0.9 titer.
Mm-hmm.
Theirs was over 500.
Really?
And what I have found out, that the labs, no matter who you use, because it's particles, they can't distinguish if it's particles or the real virus. It is particles of measles, because the individual didn't have any symptoms of measles, you know, the red cheeks or anything like that. Also had high hexose diamase, which is one of the components that was used in making a sensor of this neurosensor device, and had high barium.
It comes from the chemtrails.
Correct. It's supposed to be five parts per million, okay? And I'm not saying that's normal, okay? Because you shouldn't have it in your body, any of these chemicals. The
right.
thing is, that person's level was 300.
So they got exposed to something in particular.
Correct. And the thing is, it was specific, okay? And
right.
what I'm saying, and what I'm trying to share with you and your audience, is that it's not just one thing. It is a composite of a lot of things that then you have to figure out what it is. What is the innovative technology? What is the design of it? Because anyone I've known, that if they had a level of 500 measles, they would be having measles and other complications.
So what you're suggesting is that they were exposed to somehow to components that are being used to detect measles.
Detect measles in the air, yeah, you know, through radio frequency. This individual, I suspect, has been exposed to a sensor, okay?
Okay,
a specific device, et cetera, because there was no symptoms. There was no, I mean, they had normal, not normal symptoms. They had symptoms of inflammation, nausea, et cetera, because these are high levels. But what I'm saying is that if you are sprinkled or you're dusted or something's going on in your home by whoever means, okay, these levels were extremely high and not have the traditional chemical symptoms.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. And the only way it can do that is when you're looking at nano, is that, yes, you're given a dose, you're given exposure. The majority who's giving you the nano thinks that, oh, okay, it's small, it's going to, you know, disperse out of the body, et cetera. No. It tends to accumulate more than a regular chemical because it interacts with the charge of the body and at the same time lodges in specific organ systems that impaired specific enzymes. Nothing like, from what I've experienced in 36 years, like a regular chemical.
Right. Yeah, it's very different.
Even,
so,
even Dr. Wang, who is on my show, who created a lot of phenomenal work in developing nano hooks and, you know, just nanotechnology and even the nano battery. Every time you see one of those shoes on little kids or adults that light up, he invented that battery. The thing is that with all of it, it has a different physical characteristic than the original parent compound. Example, we have gold, we see it as yellow, but in nano it's red. At the same time, it can be as wires, and it red wires in some of these materials that come out. You see, like, someone took a piece of a red crown, and ran it on some wall, which, you know, had lumpy bumpy there, you know, in the type of stucco or that on the wall, meaning it wasn't flat surface. And you can see the breaks in it, but you have to be very observant in it. Even now, I got involved with this in 2006 hardcore, you before me. They're now offering, you know, webinars, some of the manufacturers of equipment, so that you can characterize nanoparticles. So it's been very hard, even on the analytical side versus the other.
Can
I guess you a question? And this is not a trick question or anything, but just using the example of what I shared with your audience on nano diamonds, and as you stated, the one test of the liver, well, it doesn't seem like it's sufficient. I personally think, and my question to you is, I think that if you have a compound, which is like the diamonds or whatever you're making, that you should be able to create a test panel that addresses the parent chemical and whatever it could metabolize to. In addition to, if you're absorbing the compound, meaning, you know, the chemotherapy agent, et cetera, this way, because no one wants to overdose their patient, because the problem with neuro, and it's right on their website at Berkeley where they created NeuroDust, is that because it's charged, it can interact with, you know, your blood. It can cause a stroke or, you know, accumulation that way. So no one wants to give a person a stroke. But just think of it. What is the number one component in our blood? Hemoglobin. It has a positive charge of iron. So my question to you, Dr. Kalb, do you think that there should be a panel, you know, develop for specific testing on these types of components that are used in medicine?
Yeah, I mean, how did they get past not having FDA approval?
That's the whole thing. And I'm wondering if some of these pharmaceutical companies that are associated with this whole innovative technology in medicine, I mean, just looking at some of the investment houses that sponsored some of just the medicine for remote sensing to make sure you took your medicine. We got rid of your breast cancer, but we want to monitor that you're not creating new cancer cells, so we do this remotely or anything. One company gave $547 million for that technology. So, but it's not getting any tested on the FDA side or anything. And then there's a new, they call it the super pill, which is, it's got a sensor in it to see it where the medicine's going in your body, because this is also lab on a chip. So it's a new way to get your clinical data, so you have all your, I'm going to say, your health compliance as you're patenting it, for patent office and also for future FDA regulations, that they're putting multiple medications together so that they can see where it disperses. And that press release just came out yesterday. It's called the Super Pill.
My goodness. I didn't realize that they had anything like that.
Yeah, and I had Dr. Huber on my show. He he's a plant pathologist, a wonderful individual, and he was sharing with also Dr. Marvin Anderson on a separate show that the glyphosate, which is in the GMO foods, which we're seeing more and more GMO, we know, you know, it's a whole business, et cetera, this way. But the thing is, that compound is known to kill and inhibit plants. And what symbiotic relationship do we have with our gut, Dr. Kolb? That's
well,
a plant?
Well, I don't know which one's the plant.
No, just think of it. What makes a eukaryotic cell and a plant cell? Meaning bacteria are plants.
Oh, are they? I didn't know that.
No, it only gets the lowest animal form is those paramecians in the amoeba. And I was shocked this week. I had a client come in and, you know, degreed and everything, did not know what an amoeba was, you know, or a paramecium. Mm-hmm. And I go, wow.
Right.
So it's not in a lot of curriculums anymore.
No, uh-uh. Well, then everybody should be on probiotics if they're eating
anything with GMO. Correct. Now, isn't it interesting that the new companies that are coming out, from hardcore pharmaceutical companies, they are in the probiotic business now.
Right, yeah.
It's always double-dipping or triple-dipping. And everyone has the right to free enterprise. And that, but I just find it amazing that you can create a disease and at the same time have the antidote for it, you know? But that
it's
doesn't
kind of
take
like
away
the
pain and suffering.
The mammogram clinics and the chemotherapy agents for breast cancer made by the same companies. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
but,
true.
But anyway, the thing is, and this goes back to, we know that acidophilus is in the stomach. We have our lactobacillus between the stomach and the bladder, and then the main bifidobacters. And like in the intestinal colon, we may have 400, 500 different species of organisms in there.
Yeah.
And each animal, each bird has a different type of indigenous microflora. So it's very specific, and that's why it's very good to eat fermented foods, as you share with your clients and patients and that, as well as I do, because we need to get back to those, because you have to be creative in your foods. You have to also, and I'm a very strong stressor of edible flowers, not only for its nutritional value, but it gives that, I'm going to say, that spark back to your system, because it also has a whole range of color. And when technology can give you nano diamonds in different colors and monitor you on a pixel screen in a remote source, hey, it could be Alaska or beyond, you know. You got to antidote your colors too, you know.
So tell me exactly what's the mechanism by which these remote monitorings occur? I mean, how's the information transferred?
Oh, the information is transferred via special, whatever's been developed by the software. It's given a pulse either from a radar, satellite, or anything, and then in that process it's transferred. The individual has either the sensor in them, say like eating edible chips, which were also put on different food products and that. The thing is, it stays in the body. It's supposed to stay in the body, edible chips, 5 years.
Really?
Yeah. So the say the remote source, which is the satellite up in the sky, it can hit you, then you feel like electrical, or you feel a hum, or the smart meter situation, more electrical within your home, et cetera, sends a wave out, and then that stimulates the data to be transferred. The data is transferred not necessarily to the same satellite. It could be another satellite or through another system. The thing is the connection of human body to machine to computer. And the machine can be a piece of equipment. It can be a, the satellite or any of this other stuff. Originally, these programs were started to address under SCADA, which is a supervisory controlled data acquisition. And what it was done is from the computer is so that like you had a bridge that was run by computer stimulation or monitor your home like you have for home security. Like you can mm-hmm. call your phone and do remotely what's going on. There's some kind of sensor in your home that is sending
right.
you the signal. This is the same that happens to the body. And in some of these individuals, from the medical standpoint of nanomedicine, they also have it designed so that it can send an infrasound, which is mm-hmm. like ultrasound within the body, so then that can stimulate a mechanism so that they can monitor different physiological properties.
Well, let me ask you this. Many patients are hearing, or many people are hearing a buzzing noise now that they
mm-hmm.
didn't used to hear.
White noise. Yeah.
Right. Where's that coming from?
That's usually coming from a satellite or a ground radar.
Because
depends
a
on
lot
what
of
it is. There's
patients
a whole
complain about that because it gets really, really loud. Do you think they may have sensors in them?
They may around the ear or the nasal cavity, because there's a whole project where they were testing nano air vehicles, which were little tiny fibers that they would dump, and then it would go in your nose, in the front of your nose cavity area, and make a mm-hmm. sensor. It'd be like red blood and this cream-colored thing. It looked like a wing. It looked like a maple leaf. And mm-hmm. It would grow a wire that would go to the pineal gland, and then also mm-hmm. through the ears. So it would plant that way, you know, expand out so that it could be. But I'll tell you, we have had beautiful results, and it's an easy thing in reference to like rose water and orange water. You know, you can get those at any Middle Eastern store or Indian store or like Cost Plus or anything. Basically, mm-hmm. it's $2.99 or less. And I've had my patients take an eighth of a teaspoon in a glass of water or a cap full of the rose water for 7 days, and mm-hmm. it will just clean out the lymph. It's amazing what comes out of the body. And at the same time, the orange has always had a natural affinity to go after viral components. So if there's a lot of these
really?
Particles or anything, it will go to the deep joint, to the nervous system, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will advise anyone, and it's not necessarily from these waters, which are used for cooking in that in many dishes.
Mm-hmm.
Like for
right.
hot summer days, you have vanilla ice cream, you pour a little of the rose water over it so that it just refreshes you. With the rose water, though, it works very well in cleaning out the nervous system. And
mm-hmm.
everyone that has used it with a disease or without a disease, without any symptoms, they will experience within either 3 to 5 days after using only 2 glasses a day. And you can drink as much as you want, slice some cucumbers and put it in. It's wonderful. The thing is, they will sweat from the crown of their head to the bottom of their tailbone, just
wow.
in that area. And I will tell you, if you've ever been exposed to pesticides, chemicals,
oh, yeah.
mold, you will smell it, whatever you've been exposed to as a
mm-hmm.
kid. And from that time, you will notice that you perspire like you used to perspire when you were a child.
Mm-hmm.
So it really cleans and flushes out without doing any harm. But I will say that some of these chemicals that may be bound to tissue, to fat, and remember our nervous system, especially our brain, is 95% fat. It will have these odors, you know, from the nasal cavity. Also, they experienced this odor of the chemicals that they had. So I always tell my patients, write down what you smell. What did it smell like? So that then you can go back in time and figure out when were you exposed to that, if you can remember that.
Yeah.
And what also happens is that because of these toxins, example like organophosphate chemicals that love to go to the nervous system, diazinon, et cetera, they can mess up the the nerve bundle channel for chlorine. So if you do this and you experience like a pool like you had with exposure to chlorine, or you know, where it runs like an electrical charge down your nerve, do take some potassium or magnesium to get it in balance, because that's it. Or like a little bit of table salt under the tongue, you know, as a first aid measure, because you just need a little bit. It's just, it's amazing when somebody's having an electrical charge from a nerve, the nerve bundle, the chlorine channel, and all you have to do is put a couple grains of salt, table salt, under your tongue to get the chlorine. I will also say that if you take any of these waters and do it like as a rinse, gargle with it, and also, not the pure, diluted, because you don't know how toxic you are. And there's nothing wrong with it. Many Middle Eastern people, they've had it in their diet forever. They just drink it, you know, like a shot glass of it. But the thing is...
But don't do that at first.
At first. Don't. And it's wonderful over ice and everything. The thing is, though, what I have found is if you take this and you swish it in your mouth, it is amazing what stuff comes out. I had people just say that they felt that the chemicals that were like under their tongue or in their, you know, throat area just come out, and their throat and everything reshaped.
Yeah, well, that's true with oil pulling too. It's similar.
Oh yes,
idea.
And I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
And bay leaf
water.
But
that'll get out hydrophobic chemicals better. You know, the.
Yeah,
I guess it's because you've got so many blood vessels so close to the surface in the mouth. I think that's probably what's going on, Well, that's great, because I know many of us have been exposed to insecticides and pesticides because we weren't eating organic all of our life, you know, and those are difficult to get out.
You know,
very difficult to get out. And so
I grew up in a home where...
complex molecules.
Yeah, and all of us have had bugs in our house or anything like that,
especially
if you grow up in the South or anything, because it's just perfect. You know, it's like if you live in Florida and you're, you didn't have air conditioning, your shoes would get moldy, you know? The thing is that it's easy, it's refreshing. You could even be creative and put some mint in it and make popsicles with it. It's just fun, but it's economic, and I've also used this like a cap full of either the rose or the orange, because the orange is citrusy, you know. So you could use it with your favorite vinegars and your olive oil and seasoning, and make a wonderful, wonderful salad dressing too.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Well, thanks for that tip. And you say that that's fairly common in anything that is importing from the Middle East or India.
Oh, definitely, yes. And
and
there's a chain store called Cost Plus that's, you know, in major areas where you have those things, and it's down their Middle Eastern, right next to their Italian aisle. And they can even order it online, you know, through Amazon or any of those things. But what I'm saying is the normal cost is like $2.99 or less, okay? I even think they're now carrying it in Walmart.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well,
so who knows? Just make it convenient for the individual. Also, I want to bring out, we talked about viruses, but I also want to bring out that recently on a the use of the RNA, because viruses are mainly the RNA versus the DNA, and there, mm-hmm. there's a whole new generation of new pharmaceuticals that are going to be made by artificial viruses.
Hmm.
So, and this, I think, is important because I know you and I had chemistry, an organic mm-hmm. chemistry, and we know that when you have an organic compound, the American Chemical Society, you create a compound or you identify a compound, you register it with that organization, so it has the chemical abstract on it, you know, how it's made, et cetera, this way. But we have to look at this. Remember when they created penicillin, it was isolated from the mold penicillin, and it was live and it was very good antibiotic, et cetera. But then after 1947, it was mm-hmm. synthesized, made
right.
by petroleum chemicals. Okay.
And everybody had allergic reactions to it.
To it, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And the thing is, this is the same thing with any botanical nutritional supplement. If they add a coating of the nano, then they can patent it. Otherwise,
right,
you can't
yeah.
patent the plant unless it's the
right.
hybrid stuff. The artificial yeah. viruses are the new way of, I'm going to call it cloning, or the new way of synthesizing so that there's more power and more control over it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's true, yeah.
But what,
that's interesting.
But what I'm saying, too, okay, you create an artificial virus, and you're using it to deliver. If you're using any virus, to me, the host, which is the for the medication, you're using this probably mainly for gene therapy, which is a whole other business. And the thing is, it's going to go in through the nucleus, because that's what viruses do. They use
right,
your
yeah.
cells as the host. So
right.
who knows what's going to happen?
That's true. It really needs to be regulated. Yeah, we're coming up at the end of our hour, Dr. Hilde. Would you like to give your contact information once
sure.
more?
Sure. I appreciate that. I'm at Integrative Health Systems. We're in Los Angeles, California, and our phone number is 323-466-2599. And if we have our corporate website, which is onecellonelight.com, and our main contact is the radio show onecellonelightradio.wordpress.com. And thank you, Dr. Kalb, for having me on the show, and hope we do it again in the future, because there's a lot more medicine. I went on my little tangent,
yeah.
but I'm glad that we had the opportunity to share the information with your audience.
Well, we'll get you back on soon, because I know that we have more to discuss. And thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, and you figure out what kind of paddle we can do with these artificial viruses, because
right,
this is going to be
right.
because you know your patients and everybody's going to be more affected, because there's a whole generation that got exposed to the hepatitis virus. You know,
right,
being for the injections and everything.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
My pleasure. Thank you for everything.
Thank you so much. We've been interviewing Dr. Hildegard Staninger on nanomedicine. Next week, we're going to interview Connie Strathheim, create a toxin-free body and home starting today. And then Dr. Barry Leica will be on the 20th, Don't Choose a Cosmetic Surgeon Without Me. September events, Noetic Science Meeting is on Thursday, September 18th at 7:30 at the Dunwoody office. Sophia Wellman, who is a film producer, will be providing a free film screening of Death as Life. It's a documentary on what we will all eventually face one day, which is our death. September Millennium Healthcare event on Tuesday, September 23rd, Dr. Nadia Danani will be discussing homeopathy. Thank you for joining us, and join us next week.